right, welcome back. Second half of the weekend edition of the KE Report. And as promised, we are now chatting with Mike Larson, editor-in-chief at Money Show. I'll post a link in the show notes on our website and in your podcast player to the Money Show website where you can check out all their upcoming conferences. Now, Mike, we're going to take a more broad look at these markets, dealing first and foremost with, I guess we can call it, optimism around the Trump presidency. This whole Trump trade, we're seeing a lot of sectors benefit. Bitcoin screaming higher, closing in on $100,000 as we are recording this. Small caps have benefited. Broad averages broadly are much higher. Financial sector has also benefited. What's your takeaway from, at least right now, the early on winners of that election result there, Mike?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. The last two chart of the week columns I do every Monday on moneyshow.com, and the last two chart of the week columns I did were basically about the Trump trade, how even before the election, the market was kind of leaning into Trump trades, and then essentially after the election, how every single one of those got turbocharged. And, you know, if you look across the board via asset class, it's okay. Trump is sort of the crypto candidate. That's the way he's perceived by the market. So you've seen Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies explode. He's seen as, taking a lighter approach to banking regulation in addition to cryptocurrency regulation. So you've seen things like the regional banks, the KRE took off, 10, 15% in just a few days. Obviously, Trump and Elon Musk have quite the bromance going. So you've seen, Tesla shares rocket higher on the assumption that, Elon Musk is going to get some payola or some benefit from, helping put his money into getting Trump elected. You've seen the dollar take off. You've seen oil fall on sort of the, drill baby drill is the slogan that Trump's used for a long time. And, that's great for energy companies that want to have access to new properties and things like that. But in terms of supply demand imbalance, more supply, especially U.S. supply, ultimately could, push, the price of oil down. So that's kind of been the Trump trade encapsulated in a nutshell. And, you've seen gold and silver on the flip side of that fall because some money that was in precious metals is going into crypto instead. And you're also seeing interest rates. I mean, the bond market's gotten annihilated since Trump got in office, or looked like he was going to get in office. You already had bonds selling off kind of on the expectation that's the way things were headed in October. And that's gained a little more steam in November with the actual election results. So you've seen all of those asset classes move in that direction. I think ultimately, I think that some of his policies are going to get enacted, especially because it looks like there may be a red sweep with the Republicans not just taking the Senate, but also retaining the House. We haven't gotten 100% confirmation on that, but it looks like that's the direction it may be headed. And one of the problems is I think that, big picture, I think a lot of that is probably healthy. It's good. For the market, if you forget the politics of it, you just put your investor or trader hat on, what does the market want? It wants less regulation. It wants lower taxes. It wants, greater profits, all of that stuff, which is kind of what, the markets are expecting Trump and the Republicans to push through versus what you might have seen had Harris won. The one issue that I think in the very recent, kind of last day or two as we're recording this, that I've started noticing and thinking about is whether the incoming administration is going to score an own goal. If you follow soccer, you know what an own goal is. It's when you screw up and kick the ball into your own net and you score a point for the other team versus the other team scoring one for you. And the problem is if you don't get Trump or one of his surrogates out there soon talking about, or at least throwing a bone to the bond market and saying, look, hey, we're going to have greater growth. We're going to have this, we're going to have that. But we're still going to keep an eye on deficits and debt. We're not going to go way overboard. You don't sort of, if you keep trumpeting, sorry about the pun, if you keep trumpeting all the things you're doing to promote growth and tariffs and, this and promote U.S. business and so on, but you don't talk about the potential inflationary impact. You don't say, but you know what, we're still going to show some fiscal discipline. They're going to kick the ball in their own net. They're going to basically push things too far. The bond market's going to fall too much in price. Rates are going to move too much higher in yield. And what is that going to mean? That's going to mean the stock market struggles from here. So I think that's the real thing you got to keep an eye on in the short term. And you saw a little bit of it earlier this week when interest rates shot up again, and that actually caused the stock market to roll over on an intraday basis. So you guys, we've talked for quarters on end about my be bold view, and I still think longer term, again, forgetting the politics of it, longer term, what the administration is talking about is good for markets. But, in the shorter term, maybe from now through year end, got to try and show a little bit of discipline, or I think that things are going to get a little squirrely in the stock market.
Well, Mike, I think a great summary there of the kind of the post-election Trump trade and even the pre-election Trump trade. And you raised an interesting point about, you know, messaging to the market or accidentally scoring a goal themselves. I think that you've seen a lot of the fear trade come off also because of the election certainty instead of the uncertainty people were expecting, and also probably the downplaying of geopolitical tensions moving forward because Trump has been vocal about, you know, putting an end to the wars that are going on. So I think some of the wind came out of gold. You saw the VIX sell off by 20% the day after the election, so people were pulling off their hedges, and the bond market selling off is, again, you know, usually a safe haven play that people are in. So the animal spirits are back and the speculation is on full tilt. But at this point, do you think that they do need to address things like tariffs? How will they use them? Because they could be quite inflationary, especially if some of those tariffs boomerang back on U.S. companies when other countries put tariffs on the U.S. So do you think we need more clarity around what the plan is for fiscal discipline that you just laid out? And what can they actually do to offset the tax cuts? Where can they make cuts in government spending?
Yeah, a couple thoughts on that. I mean, first of all, you're absolutely right. Volatility, I think, you know, there was probably a little extra volatility being priced and a little extra insurance being bought on the assumption that the polls were so tight. You know, it's not just that Trump might have event, or people, I think, were leaning towards a Trump victory, but they were also thinking, you know, this could take a week, 2 weeks, a month, who knows how long to get a final answer. So I think part of the reason we had such a violent move, not just in equities to the upside, but volatility to the downside, is that we knew the answer within, what, 12 hours of the polls closing, give or take. In terms of Trump himself. And then, you know, we saw what happened with the Senate pretty quickly. The House is still out there, but it looks like that's going to go the Republicans' way, most likely, but by a slim majority. So I think part of it was just getting an answer pretty quickly or very quickly relative to expectations was part of it. You know, and then part of it, again, is obviously having that mandate, having, you know, the bigger vote totals than we had previously, where there were, you know, that kind of gives him a little more, you know, authority to say, look, the country's behind what I want to do. So the market's pricing that in. You know, the issue with tariffs, of course, is that, you know, forget what people are going to say about it from a political standpoint. The reality is, I mean, the foreign countries don't pay for it. We do. I mean, if, you know, you slap a tariff on goods coming into the country, what happens to the companies that sell those goods? They're just going to raise prices to compensate. So, you know, that is a potential inflationary thing on the goods side of things. You've seen this, that said, you've seen the supply chain, a lot of the pressures from inflation that we had as a result of COVID, plus the, you know, kind of tail end of COVID massive stimulus we had. A lot of that has come out of the pipeline. You look at the latest CPI figures. I mean, is 3.3% year over year in the core CPI good? No, the Fed would like to see it closer to 2%. But it's essentially half what we had at the peak in 2022 on a headline basis, given some of the declines in energy prices. You know, we're back to that sort of mid twos range. So we're not where I think the Fed wants us to be. But we've been headed in that direction. So the worst of the inflationary push is behind us. But again, that does not include the forward looking impact of tariff policy and some of the other things that may happen. So I think ultimately that's part of what the bond market's pricing in. They're not just pricing in greater growth, they're pricing in the potential inflationary impact of tariff policy if it gets extreme. And they're just pricing in, you know, the fact that there's more of a mandate versus gridlock, a gridlocked environment in Washington. So again, the stock market is enjoying the euphoria effect, but just in the last 48 hours or so, you're starting to see that concern seep in. And I think that's going to be the big story. I mean, we've priced a lot of positive momentum in. You know, people are going to start to say, if we don't get some discipline, or at least a sop to discipline, then that's going to cause issues in the bond market that, instead of just being sort of acknowledged, are going to be kind of worried about. So we'll see what happens there. Ultimately, again, though, I don't see, you know, I don't see anything to kind of change my longer term be bold thesis. I think, you know, going back 6-9 months, I was telling you guys, I think one of the biggest stories is going to be money rotating out of Mag 7 into everything else. And boy, you know, I don't necessarily think it would, or I should say, to back up all the way to July, we started seeing that in July and August, you know, with those initial sort of shock waves where money came way out of tech, moved into small caps. And then we gave some of that ground back. But then post-election, you know, we've seen it again. It's financials, it's industrials, it's small caps, it's value, it's all these other parts of the market, kind of like the, I was joking with somebody today, I call it sort of the Warren Buffett part of the market that's doing very well. Whereas the stuff that was hot before is, you know, it's not doing terribly. I mean, tech's not down, but it's not leading as much. And, you know, I think that's going to probably be the story as we head into the new year. And I think probably for most of next year, too. I think the forgotten parts of the market are going to have their day in the sun. And I think if you've got to look for where you want to be overweight, you want to be buying, you want to be adding exposure, that's where it's got to be.
So, Mike, on the point of these tariffs, look, and to tying that into small caps, I was reading recently the argument that, yes, tariffs are bad. They can lead to inflation, but they really impact the multinational corporations. Small caps are more domestic based. So is there an argument that it does seem like tariffs are coming from simply an investment standpoint, trying to step away from prognosticating what's going to happen data wise? Will tariffs continue to help small caps then?
Yeah, I mean, look, what's the goal of the policy? It's to force more onshoring or nearshoring of manufacturing. It's to bring, you know, encourage repatriation of money here. It's to encourage hiring here versus there. And I put here and there in quotes, and so on. So, I mean, that's what the market's pricing in. It's pricing in sort of the America First economic policy. Relative to, you know, what we've seen for many, many years. So I think that that rotation from a logic standpoint probably does make sense. But again, I would also point out, you know, what's more levered to U.S. growth versus foreign growth? I mean, what companies generate the larger share of revenue and earnings in the U.S. versus foreign economies? And that's, like you said, that's the smaller caps. It's the companies that don't have as many far-flung manufacturing plants and markets, and they don't get 40, 50, 60% or whatever the number may be company to company of their sales overseas. So yeah, I think it's logical to expect that you know, if policy is going to be tilted towards favoring domestic companies, domestic profits, domestic growth, and what have you, that's where investment dollars are going to flow too. So I already liked that part. I already liked a lot of those forgotten parts of the market, and I sure as heck like them even more now.
Well, Mike, let's also bring taxes into the equation here. Under a Harris administration, the plan was to raise taxes, obviously to bring in more receipts to the government, but it was going to affect investors in a negative sense because they were going to raise capital gains tax, especially on high net worth investors. With the likelihood that Trump is going to extend the tax cuts that he put in 2017, do you think that kept some money from maybe panic selling the end of this year and keep the money in the market because now they don't have that overhang of the higher tax bracket starting next year and they can feel confident to leave their money in the markets? Is that a factor kind of, I guess, juicing the markets a little bit as well?
Yeah, man, you did all the work for me. I could just say yes and that'd be the end of my answer. But no, in all seriousness, you're absolutely right. I think some of the tax implications and tax ramifications of the election play a part into what's happening here in this kind of condensed. I mean, when you think about it, from the election to the end of the year, it's really only about 7-8 weeks. So in the short term, given the results, given sort of what it means for tax policy along with everything else, you're seeing a magnified impact on various things, including, as you said, people's desire to maintain exposure to the market versus take some chips off the table. I think ultimately, though, again, when you look at the longer term, when you look at what's going to happen over the next few quarters and next 12 months, if the Trump administration and Congress try to do, you know, keep too many of these tax cuts, try to do more and so on, you know, you're going to be talking about deficit numbers and debt numbers that are just going to be astronomical. I mean, and the growth is not going to be enough to compensate. So I think, again, ultimately longer term, the more the bond market, the sort of tremors or whispers in the bond market are ignored, the louder they're going to get, the more violent they're going to get, and the more the stock market's going to have to pay attention, and Washington's going to have to pay attention. So again, I think that, you know, we're kind of in the euphoria phase now and the ignorance is bliss phase now. But next year, I think part of this story is going to be what happens with rates. You know, is the bond market going to throw a little bit more of a tantrum? How much Fed cutting is now taken off the table? And is there enough growth boost from policy to offset that, you know, the impact that you get to markets from cheaper money? And a lot of that's going to get sorted out as we head into the start of next year. So, again, I don't, you know, I think that we're probably going to start seeing some chop. We're probably going to start seeing a little bit of pausing, give back as people, you know, the euphoria phase fades and some of the reality starts seeping in.
Yeah, that's the thing, though, Mike. We still have just under 2 months of people to guess what's going to happen before Trump actually has to do something concrete, which is, I think, just almost a sweet spot for markets. But then next year, boy, oh boy, that's when the big question mark is. Let's also talk about the energy markets and that whole drill baby drill policy. Now, a couple sides to this story. One being, if U.S. increases production, which is pretty close still to all-time high U.S. production, you would think prices would come down. Maybe investors, maybe general U.S. citizens would like that, as gas prices could come down. Maybe that impacts inflation. But the flip side of that, maybe Trump gets really tough with OPEC countries and they shut off some of their supply to the U.S., which would increase prices. How do you balance out what's going to happen in the energy sector, especially around oil?
Yeah, sure. I think what I see for energy, kind of for crude, I'll just say crude oil prices, WTI, Brent, whatever you want to call it. What I see happening with energy prices is kind of like what happened to gold back in 2022, when there were some bullish factors there, but the rising dollar, the surging dollar, really was a governor on the gold market. And that's why, you know, you had treasuries and stocks tank, but gold, I mean, relatively speaking, outperformed, but basically didn't go anywhere in U.S. dollar terms. I would say you kind of have a similar thing here, where policy, drill baby drill, will act as sort of a governor on the oil market, but it's not like you're going to see a deep recession. It's not like you're going to see growth fall apart. It's not like you're going to see China continue to suffer. I mean, we were talking before we got on air about, you know, China stimulus and what impact that might have on commodities. And we've clearly seen, you know, China start throwing some money, and not a small amount, at their economy. So I think it's more of a governor type effect, you know, where you don't see crude oil surge, but I don't think it's going to be saying where, you know, we're back to $40, $30 oil or anything crazy like that. I think we're going to kind of be in that flop and chop range, you know, and just that kind of environment, like we had with gold, versus just some collapse because we're going to have more supply out there.
Well, Mike, you brought up the surging dollar in that, and it has surged post-election along with rates. Typically, in the last administration for Trump, he wanted to have a weaker dollar, so this is kind of counter to what he actually wants. Could that be a real hitch in the get-along as far as the commodity sector moving forward? And what kind of monetary tools does the Fed have? And do you think Trump will kind of, you know, batter them again to try to get rates lower so that the dollar comes down? What do you think that dynamic between a Trump administration and the Federal Reserve will be in this administration?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I think that's why you talk about gold. I mean, we've pulled back to sort of those high 2,500 range. You know, we're pushing 27, 28, getting up to that level. And I'm not surprised we've seen gold pull back, especially because, again, I think some money, look, especially newer money that you know, younger investors, some of them are just saying that I'm going to chase Bitcoin. And the part of my portfolio that I put in alternative assets, I'm going to take some money out of gold and put into Bitcoin because it's going up, or putting into crypto because Trump's going to be more favorable to that. So I think that dynamic's clearly in play. But longer term, you know, there's going to be this tension between the Fed and the administration. You know, we already had Powell's press conference where he basically came out and said no when reporters started asking if he would step down. So it'll be interesting to see how that sorts out. But I think ultimately gold, and maybe especially some of the, you know, silver, some of that's got a little more of the industrial component, probably does okay and probably, you know, finds buying support. Because again, you're going to have, you know, questions about Fed policy. You're going to have questions about the Trump, as you mentioned, not wanting the dollar to rise so much. Once we get out of this sort of euphoria period, what's going to happen? It's going to be probably bullish for gold. So, you know, if I was, as a precious metals investor, if I was seeing what you've got here at 2580 or so versus 2800 in gold, I'd be buying a lot, I think, because this, you know, I don't think the sell-off, I mean, this isn't going to send us back to $2,000 gold, in my opinion, whatsoever. It's not going to be that kind of move.
One more quick one on the energy policies here is everyone's thinking Trump is going to reinstate some of these pipelines, export terminals, really just allow natural gas companies to export their natural gas, something that Biden shut down a lot of, which I think you can make the argument it kept natural gas prices low in the U.S., which does help out the individual with lower energy prices to heat their homes. How do you see Trump's policies impacting this natural gas price, which has been quite restrained?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, one of the experts I was talking to or was reading his work, Elliot Gu, who has an energy-focused publication, he speaks at some of our events. He was talking about LNG exporters and companies exposed to that as being, you know, one of the potential big winners. Because some of what Trump can do there is unilateral, it doesn't require Congress and so on. So, yeah, I think ultimately, you know, natural gas exports, the, you know, getting some of this supply out of the U.S. and into the global markets is clearly going to be something that happens more of. And I mean, you know, look at U.S. natural gas prices. What are we doing? We're poking around at $3 now. The lows back in February and March were down about half of that amount. You know, if the U.S. is shipping more gas overseas, we can sort of he'd get more onto the world market and less just sort of sitting or being flared off in the U.S., then I think ultimately that's probably positive for that market in terms of U.S. prices. And especially, again, companies that are logistically involved in getting that gas from, U.S. producing areas to global markets.
Well, Mike, let's also bring in the Inflation Reduction Act that was passed in 2022. The Trump administration has been very critical of it and said they're going to roll back some of the policies in there. What kind of impacts does that have on things like renewable energy, clean tech, EVs? And he even had sections in there that you would think he would be constructive on, like hydrogen power and nuclear power. But if he goes in with a scalpel to the Inflation Reduction Act, what does that mean for critical minerals, clean energy, that whole side of the market?
My take is that there's a lot of constituencies and a lot of senators and representatives in Congress whose districts have benefited from some of the spending, the largesse coming out of Washington in those sectors, in those regions, in those states, in those counties. So while I think Trump kind of had to talk politically about doing that, you're going to have a lot of these representatives who all of a sudden, if less money is flowing from the federal government to their districts, they're going to have some angry voters and some angry representatives. So I think probably of all the things that he's talked about, probably the things are going to have the, you're going to have regulations and some things that are no longer going to push EVs. They're going to roll some of that back. Some of this money that's been sprinkled all over the US of A, I don't think they're going to just all of a sudden say, give it to us back. You're not getting any more, because that's a surefire way to get a fight with Congress. And if you want to maintain, the one side on the House situation, if they do have the majority, it's going to be a very slim majority. So you can't claw back all this money and the jobs that come with it and the growth that comes with it and expect to maintain, strict discipline in terms of people voting for your stuff. So I would be less worried about that. And I think the impact is going to be a little more muted on some of those companies that are involved in those spaces.
So, Mike, one quick follow-up. You already shared with us kind of your outlook for precious metals, but I want to talk real quick about the stocks, something like GDX. It's been on a great uptrend ever since March. Higher highs, higher lows, but it's been the last about 3.5 weeks now that it's been on a downtrend. And really, in about 3 weeks, GDX went from overbought to oversold on a daily chart. We've seen some higher volumes come in. Where do you see a bottom for GDX? Do you see this now as a buying opportunity, or is this going to be a next year when people realize just what's happening with policy type of thing?
Now, I'd be buying here, and as we roll towards the calendar of 20, the point where we roll into 25, I'd be buying even more, I think, in terms of tactical positioning. I mean, I don't think this is the quote-unquote end of the bull market in mining. I don't think that this is, more than people just reacting to, oh, the dollar is flying, and oh, Trump's going to do this, and Trump's going to do that. But I mean, ultimately, these companies and precious metals in general, in an environment where there's sort of Trump-driven volatility, there's still some, geopolitical questions, there's tension with the Federal Reserve, there's, Shad pointed out, when it comes to, Trump, ultimately, is he going to want to see the dollar just take off and zoom to the stars? No, he's not. All that stuff's going to get settled in, and I think that, we'll work through this. So, I'd have no problem saying, look, I think this is the end of the bull market. If I thought it was the end of the bull market, I don't, so I won't.
Well, just broadening back to look at the economy, maybe a little different than the market. As you know, Mike, we've heard for years that we were going to have a recession that never came. It was the most advertised recession that never showed up. Now, the yield curve has steepened and uninverted. There are some people pointing to concern still that maybe things aren't as rosy as the markets are acting like they are. Is there any potential that we do finally see that economic contraction come in next year? Sometimes the first year of an administration is a rough year. How are you looking at the health of the economy?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think that this economy is still, it weathered the slowdown that we had. We had, I think, already a soft landing. We had a bear market in 2022 that was pricing in some of that risk. All the stuff that was worried about, we've kind of already had. So if you now look at fiscal policy potentially being more stimulative and under Trump versus Harris, if you now look at regulatory policy being more market friendly, if you now look at the tilt of money and growth kind of being more domestic versus foreign and so on, I mean, you add it all up and it's one of those things where it's all, in my opinion, pretty fundamentally supportive of U.S. stocks. So I'm not worried about a recession. I suppose if we do get a complete rate shock, absolute mayhem in the bond market and so on, then all bets are off. But I don't think it's going to be like that. I think that it's going to be more, you get the pressure, rising rates, it kind of forces some more discipline. Some of the people that have been around for longer, and the Republicans on in Congress and so on, are going to be like, hey man, look, you want to do some of this stuff, but if you don't, back off a little bit, the bond market's not going to be happy, and that's going to cause problems. So I think ultimately that those forces will be sort of, will offset some of what Trump wants to do. And ultimately that in turn will kind of be more market friendly too. So, I've said it before. If I see things that I think are real worrisome, real troublesome, that the market may not be appreciating, I'm going to call it out. But if I think that people are probably over worried given what's going on, I'm going to say that too. And I kind of think that's where we're at. I don't see a lot of reasons to panic, worry, fill in the blank for what verb you want to use.
Hey, fair enough, Mike. You really have been one of our commentators over the last few years that has switched your bullish, bearish outlooks depending on what the market is telling you. So I really do respect your outlooks and your take as you see it right now. I think beginning of next year and in through even the first half of next year is going to be so critical to see if we do see any significant changes in trends, in markets, in commodities, really in anything on the back of the start of Trump's second presidency. We'll see how it all plays out, though. But very interesting this weekend show, a couple different opinions on metals and markets. Again, next year, 2025, that is going to be such an early on in the year to telling sign of what markets can celebrate and what they're going to be disappointed with. Mike, thank you very much for your time on this weekend show, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to the KE Report. Again, please visit our website, kereport.com, or listen on your podcast player. Just search the KE Report to listen to all our daily editorials throughout the week and company updates. Mike, thank you for your time. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend, everyone. Thanks again for tuning in.
You got it. Take care.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.